8, which is a briefing on the 2016-17 sport fishing regulation proposals. So, Mr. Craig, I will turn it off to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Director, Commissioners. For the record, Craig Burley, Fish Management Division Manager. And similar to last year, we're going to have some regional experts participate in this briefing today. And as we walk through the rules, this is for the 2016-2017 regulations. And so what we'd like to do is talk a bit about the process for this year, the timeline and public involvement that we've used to gather these rules. Then we'll walk through at a fairly high level the regulation proposals themselves, and then along the way we'll provide some opportunity for the Commission to ask questions or any discussion that you might like to have. So again, this is a part of a three-year schedule that the Commission asked the Department to utilize. Last year, recall, we covered the Columbia Basin rules. This year, again, we'll be focused on the Puget Sound and coastal freshwater. We do have one rule that is a continuation from last year, and we'll cover that at the end of the presentation. That's regarding warm water fish species in the lower Columbia. And then next year, we'll be focused on marine finfish, our forage fish species, and shellfish. And so this year, we asked the public to submit proposals to the department focused on any critical conservation needs that they saw or any recreational opportunity. And so we did that in the May time period. The month of May was open for proposals. We notified the public through email. We have a pretty extensive email list. We had press releases that were sent out, as well as website notification. This year, we also convened an advisory group, and this was to focus on North Coast steelhead regulations. We knew we were going to receive a number of regulations regarding steelhead fisheries out on the coast, and so in July, we created the North Coast Advisory Group for steelhead rules. And that group started in July and will be working through this process to give us some additional input on the rule proposals. And toward the end of the presentation, we'll be covering those rules. The comment period is open now on the proposals that we have out. It's August 7th through November 4th. Those comments then will close on November 4th. We also conducted four public meetings around the region, and we're briefing you here today. This is a briefing, no public hearing. November will focus on what the public has been providing us in terms of comments through our online process, and you'll also get to hear from the public in person at the November meeting. We'll take then all of the public testimony that we hear during this process, and we'll be bringing recommendations or options to the Commission for consideration and action at the December meeting in Port Townsend. And then those regulations will take effect in July of 2016. So, as I said, we solicited proposals in May of this year, and we received over 324 proposals. Staff reviewed those proposals, and in some instances, we were able to combine proposals that we saw. And what we ended up is 50 proposals that we're recommending go forward for further consideration. The remainder of the proposals we also included in our online webpage, and we're asking the public to provide us comment not only on those that we're recommending go further for consideration, but also if the public had any comments on rules that we recommend not go forward for further consideration, that they could provide comment on those as well. And we can provide you a summary of that information as well in November. And so what we're going to do today during this presentation, Chris Donnelly, recently our Region 1 Fish Program Manager, is going to talk about the cross-program region or cross-region rules. And then we've asked Brett Barktall, our district biologist in Region 4, to talk about the Region 4 rules. Steve Tiesfelds, our Region 6 program manager, he'll talk about the Region 6 Puget Sound and coastal rules. And then Chris Donnelly and I will come back up. Chris will finish off with the Lower Columbia rule, and I'll close out the briefing. I did want to direct your attention to your notebooks. In the notebooks, you have a summary document that provides a bit more detail than we were anticipating providing to you today. We'll provide an overview summary, but the specifics of the rules are in your notebook under the tab marked, I believe, number 8, sport fishing rules. And you should also have a copy of the PowerPoint presentation as well. And so we'll be referring to the notebook materials throughout the briefing. So with that, then, I'd turn the presentation over to Chris Donnelly.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Commissioners, I'll cover cross-region proposals that are not regionally specific, starting with Washington Administrative Code technical changes. These are just fixes to the code that we've found in the last year. They'll be contained within your packet. Nothing of significance, basically correcting language or omissions that would miss the intent of the original rule that you would have passed as the commission. Number two, clarifying fly definition in the rules. So with the advent of technology, there's a lot of foams and rubber legs and things that individuals are using to create flies now that we didn't have captured in the definition of a fly. So this just basically broadens the scope of the recipe for a fly. Yes?
So foam and rubber I can live with, but why are we authorizing explicitly lead when we sort of like to get human sources of lead out of, or at least I would. But I thought it was an interest of the department to protect the wildlife and try to get human sources of lead out of the environment.
So I think we might be capturing something that most individuals are using now on flies, and they weight flies with lead tape on the shank of the hook and then cover it with whatever materials they're using. So we're essentially catching up to the technique that they're using. However, if that's something that the commission feels strongly about, we can certainly go back and correct that portion of the definition if we'd want to eliminate it. Remove internal combustion motors. It seems...
Yes, just to follow up on that, would that be more in keeping with other states then?
Most states would allow lead tape or the use of some sort of lead on a fly, and okay. They're kind of integral to the recipe. They'll be wrapped around the shank, and then it's very common for nymphing.
Yeah.
Although, you know, having said that, you could disallow it, and there's other methods, the use of beads and glass and things that would allow you to weight a fly. So it wouldn't, in my mind, impair the ability of an angler to get a fly at depth. It just would change the materials that they would have to use to do it. So it certainly is up for consideration for you.
Thank you.
Okay to move forward. Remove internal combustion motors. So this really is about taking the ability to use it a combustion motor on streams where it's not practical. So in the stream strategy back, I guess it's been 4 or 6 years ago, there were some streams that were omitted from the exclusion of combustion motors. We're continuing to catch up on those as we move through the rule process. So the streams that will be considered here, nobody's running a combustion motor on there now, or if they are, they're probably colliding with a lot of things doing it. So they're not practical, and we're just continuing to remove those. Allow harvest to grass carp. This is a bit of a unique one in the sense that we've allowed the use of grass carp as a way to control aquatic vegetation. That's been through a fish transport application and an EIS process through SEPA that folks can apply to use grass carp. And what we found is over time, in some of these bodies of water, we have an overgrazing impact from putting in these grass carp. One of the issues that you have is that there might be an overstocking because people want to see results faster. Well, they overstocked, and then you have a fish that lives for an exceptionally long time, and we basically have run out of forage for those fish. So in the three lakes that are listed here, the proposal is to allow anglers to remove some of those to be able to allow some of those aquatic macrophytes to rebound from a lake health perspective. And all three of these lakes, we've heard from the lake management districts or homeowners associations that they have a grass carp issue and that they would like some help in solving that. So this rule will come forward. There are, however, hundreds of other, at least dozens of other bodies of water in the state where there are grass carp, where we're not proposing to have any type of fishery.
Is that only by fishing, or does that include bow?
Is it archery involved? I thought we excluded archery.
We can get back to you on that. We had some discussion about that. I believe it is including archery in the proposal, but let me check and I can get back to you.
The intent certainly is to be able to limit their abundance, so by all means that are legal. Remove crappie harvest restrictions. So one of the things that we've done with the dedicated warm water fund that was committed to the state of Washington is a lot of data gathering. This exercise occurred back about a decade ago where we looked for waters where we could grow trophy-sized crappie because one of the assumptions is that exploitation limits their ability to reach trophy proportions. So there were a number of lakes where we went to a 10-fish limit, 9-inch minimum, to try to get those fish to grow up to those sizes. In the lakes that are listed here, what we found is the level of productivity is really the limit of crappie growth. It's not exploitation. So having this limit on essentially isn't creating the fishery that we had intended. And most of the fish, their mortality rates are so high, they're dying before they achieve 9 inches. So we'd like to remove this rule and allow anglers to take those fish at any length and with no limit to take best advantage of that population of fish. Remove daily limits on brook trout in western Washington. This focuses mostly on streams, and this is a bull trout rule. So this is about reducing genetic interaction and competition with native salmonids, mostly with bull trout. So you'll see a list of streams in your packet where we're proposing to just take the limits off brook trout. A nice native, non-native fish that a lot of folks like to fish for, so it certainly is an opportunity to increased harvest opportunity for recreational anglers. Allow the retention of stray hatchery steelhead. This would be in streams where we don't have hatchery stocking of steelhead, but stray steelhead occur there. Currently, the way that the rules are structured in most places, there's just not a fishery for steelhead, so if you catch one, you have to throw it back. With this rule proposal, that would give the angler the ability to keep that fish, retain it, remove that hatchery fish from the environment, or they could potentially go out and interact negatively with wild steelhead.
I think maybe a point to mention on that rule as well is that we would structure it so that you would only be able to retain that hatchery steelhead if it was open for game fish or salmon. So we wouldn't be creating a loophole where someone could go in and fish closed waters for steelhead.
Thanks, Craig. Missed that point. adjust trout harvest regulations for lowland lake fisheries. In a number of Puget Sound fisheries, there's a 5-fish trout limit, but only 2 over 14 can be retained. And this was a rule that was created because we saw high grading in fisheries where we had a lot of very small trout being released and a few very large trout being released. We've adjusted production goals as a program across the western part of the state, trying to grow larger trout. And so the phenomenon of high grading that we saw has gone away or been reduced considerably, where we don't think this rule is needed any longer. So at this point, we would propose to simplify the rules enough, just go to a 5 trout limit and get rid of the slot limit complexity. So providing additional year-round opportunity. We've heard a number of proposals from the public seeking lakes in both regions 4 and 6 where there could be more opportunity to fish year-round, less openers, want to be able to get after the species that really aren't available during the time when the season is open. So there's 10 lakes that are selected for this change, and I'm guessing over time we'll get quite a bit of public feedback on which ones are preferred. This list of lakes is also contained within your pamphlet or packet. Increased trout fishing opportunity in streams. This really is just related to Region 6. We thought we were going to add additional streams, but both of these streams, Flat Creek and Leech Creek, were closed during the stream strategy a few years back. We think there's enough fish there to provide additional fishing opportunity. Both of these are tributaries to Chambers Creek in Region 6. So this is just basically going to be a proposal to add additional angling days to those streams. Related to that, then, would be modifying trout fishing opportunity in select Western Washington streams. Again, picking up things that may have been omitted in the stream strategy, where we don't have anadromous conflicts with fisheries, so above barriers or places that may have not been captured in the initial exercise. This is a great opportunity for us to go back and allow more trout fishing opportunity where we can and avoid angling conflict with either listed or depressed stocks of anadromous fish.
One thing I would mention is if you look on these slides, at the bottom of the slide you'll see the number sign and then a series of numbers, and these refer to the proposal numbers in your notebook materials so that you can cross-reference the slide on the PowerPoint to the notebook materials.
Yeah, Commissioner Kerr.
I should know this, but I don't, and maybe Brett probably answered. Is Lake Sammamish a year-round lake now?
It is, yes.
Thank you.
Increase selective gear fishing opportunity. And really this should say in Western Washington because that's the public input that we've heard and that's what we're here to discuss today. But what we've heard from a number of fly anglers mostly is that there isn't enough selective gear fishing opportunity in Western Washington, and they proposed a number of different lakes. We whittled that list down to 6, which is contained in your packet, and we'll take public input on which of those lakes they would prefer to see shifted to that type of management strategy. Require mandatory steelhead retention. Not a new concept. We were back here last year talking to you about it, so moving that mandatory retention from Eastern Washington, where we approved it, to Western Washington reduces that potential for negative genetic and competitive interactions with wild steelhead and other salmonids. And it applies to streams where hatchery fish are planted and hatchery production goals are being met. So we had a stray steelhead rule that would allow for those places where they're not. And if we have issues where we're not meeting hatchery production goals, we would likely not implement this rule. And with that, I'll leave it to questions.
Questions from commission?
Well done again.
Yep.
So I'll ask Brett Barkdahl and Steve Teasfield to come up.
Take her away.
I think these are yours, Brett, to start with.
Yeah, do you want to introduce yourself? I guess we have.
Puget Sound Proposals, Region 4. This first proposal is about increasing fishing opportunity in the Lake Washington Ship Canal. Currently, part of the Lake Washington Ship Canal is closed. Regional staff has done some checking to try and understand exactly what the concerns were, and we couldn't find any concerns as to why part of it was closed. So we're advocating to reopen that section of the ship canal currently closed. The next one is Pass Lake. Pass Lake is a fly fishing only quality lake. We've been asked by the public to allow a two-rod fishing opportunity in this lake. Rattlesnake Lake. A few years ago now, Rattlesnake Lake was converted to a quality fishery. We've been asked especially by the folks that live locally, to allow for some sort of harvest in that particular lake. What we're proposing is to change it to a 2-fish daily limit, 14-inch minimum size restriction. Baker Lake, adjust kokanee and trout size limits. This rule would change the kokanee minimum size length to 18 inches. By definition, sockeye are 18 inches or over in lake, currently in this lake. So the sockeye slot would be essentially 8 to 18 inches. It would also change trout to statewide rules. Currently, the way the rules read, you're required to release trout that are over 18 inches. So this would allow an opportunity to keep any rainbow trout you catch up there over 18 inches. Blackman's Lake. Currently the limit is 3. This would change the rule to 5. The no more than 2 over 15 inches in length rule would remain in place. This would provide an opportunity for people to catch a larger number of fish that are in that smaller size range and provide consistency with our lakes statewide. Ross Lake. This is a conservation move. Currently, the rainbow trout limit in Ross Lake is 3 over 13 inches. This rule would change it to 1 over 16, and it would also allow the retention of brook trout up to 5 per day. The other thing this rule also does is it provides consistency with the rules on the Canadian side. This water is shared with Canada. So Canada has already shifted to this set of rules. Texas Pond. This is a little pond just outside of Darrington. It's been illegally planted with bass. It's got brook trout in it. This would remove the daily limit for those two species. Thornton Lake and Thornton Creek. Statewide rules except no limit on West Slope Cutthroat. Currently, it's just statewide rules. These two bodies of water have become inundated with West Slope Cutthroat. They're starting to drip into the Skagit River, and there's conservation concerns with having West Slope Cutthroat in the Skagit River itself and potentially competing and or hybridizing with steelhead and coastal cutthroat. Mill Pond, King County. This is a juvenile-only water currently, but on free fishing weekend, the way the rules are currently written, adults could fish there. This would just change it to so that it was only a juvenile-only water no matter what weekend you happen to be there. Sammamish Lake, remove hook restrictions. This would remove the single-point barbless hook restriction currently in place part of the year. Due to changes in kokanee management, we don't feel that rule is necessary these days. This is an adjust fishing rules on Whatcom Creek, Skagit, and Cascade Rivers. In these three places, we no longer plant hatchery steelhead. What this would do is remove the extended seasons that were put in place specifically to remove hatchery steelhead. This would also be consistent with our stream strategy rules for protecting wild salmonids. Chaplain Creek, close a portion of this stream. This proposal has come from the city of Everett. What they would like us to do is close the area that is encompassed within the boundaries of their water filtration plant, essentially. Currently, the rules read that you could trespass on their land. Skagit River, convert a portion of the river to catch and release trout fishing. This would remove the retention of trout from Highway 530 Bridge at Rockport to Cascade River Road Bridge. Currently, on the Skagit River, it's catch and release only for trout from Marble Mount to New Halem. It's also catch and release only on the Cascade River. This would increase the amount of area that's catch and release only for rainbow trout. Stillaguamish River night closure. This is for the area below Marine View Drive Bridge. It closes the river at night to allow our officers to patrol the area more efficiently. Tolt River. Currently, the Tolt River used to be planted with hatchery winter steelhead. It's another one that is no longer planted with hatchery winter steelhead. And that's what we're proposing to do is to go to selective gear rules during that time frame when the winter steelhead fishery would have occurred previously. This will reduce hooking mortality on wild steelhead and aligns our rules with the statewide steelhead management plan. Snohomish River. This rule would allow catch and release sturgeon fishing from the mouth to the Highway 9 bridge all year round. Currently, it's currently legal to fish for sturgeon in this section of river during time frames when either game fish or salmon are open. Questions? Any questions?
Questions? Yes, Commissioner.
Sure.
The West Salt cutthroat come up in, I think, a couple of rivers. And I was wondering, is that range expansion of natural origin fish, or is it that these were hatchery?
Well, what they were is West Slope cutthroat are actually an east side species that were extensively planted at one point in time way back, and so they're a non-native. In some cases, if you put them in the right circumstances, they'll overpopulate a lake, and that's what's happened in Lower Thornton Lake. And so we have a bunch of these little stunted trout up there, basically. So,
any other questions? Brevity and clarity.
Okay, I'll switch over to the Puget Sound portion of the Region 6 portion of Puget Sound. We'll have coast after we finish that, and then North Coast Steelhead following that, okay? Proposal in Clear Lake, Pierce County. The proposal would standardize the Kokanee daily limit with the statewide Kokanee limit. We have abundant Kokanee that can be harvested, so this would help with consistency and simplification of the regulations. Collins and Stump Lakes, these are two lakes that the public does not have access to. It's essentially only homeowners or their invited guests that can fish in these waters based on the fact that we aren't able to regulate the public as a whole. We feel we should remove the special regulations that are in the lake. Helps us remove these from the pamphlet completely. They would just be open under statewide rules. Again, focusing on trying to simplify the regulations that are out there. Black Lake Ditch. This little ditch flows from Black Lake in Thurston County down into Percival Cove and Bud Inlet in Olympia. The ditch has a number of warm water fish swimming around in it. This opportunity is to allow fishing for those warm water fish as catch and release. Would not be expanding any harvest on other salmonids in that system, but allow some additional opportunity. Alder Reservoir is a tributary, a reservoir behind Alder Dam on the Nisqually River. When we went into the stream strategy, we were able to open up the tributaries upstream of the reservoir, but what we didn't realize is that we had not actually opened the tributaries that flow directly into the reservoir. So this regulation clarifies that those tributaries that flow directly into the reservoir would be opened. It's a fairly conservative regulation of selective gear rules and two trout over 14 inches. This is above anadromous barrier, so we're just protecting the fish that are resident in that area. McAllister Creek, a small system next to the Nisqually River down near Olympia. We're going to like to propose simplifying the regulations, making it consistent with other trout and game fish rules. We have a barbless hook rule. At the same time, we have selective gear rules. We're proposing just to use selective gear rules and be consistent with our other systems.
Steve, isn't that redundant? Isn't the selective gear imply single barbless hook?
On the correct gear type, yes, and that's why we're trying to remove that redundancy, so to speak. McLean Creek is a small creek, flows into South Puget Sound. This is one of the few places our staff have been able to conduct some spawner surveys for cutthroat trout. We're not able to do very much of this. These are the coastal cutthroat, not the West Slope. What we've noted is low numbers of cutthroat in that system. We're proposing to go to catch and release and selective gear rules. This is actually consistent with most other South Sound streams. Minter Creek, another South Puget Sound system. We have a large hatchery Chinook program on the stream. The stream is open for trout fishing prior to the salmon season. Creates some problems for us in terms of trying to ensure that folks aren't down there fishing for salmon early. So in order to ensure that we meet egg take and prevent any other issues, suggesting that we close it for trout fishing prior to the salmon season opening. Kennedy Creek, again, deep South Sound, another system that we have been able to get out and do some cutthroat spawner surveys. We've noted that the number of cutthroat are low in there, suggesting that we modify the rules to end the fishing season October 31st. It had been open until the last day of February, kind of consistent with a steelhead system. Would be catch and release and require selective gear rules. Chambers Creek, this system has a salmon fishery on it, but we've noted issues with cutthroat trout in the system. So our proposal is to eliminate the use of bait except during the salmon season. So it would be selective gear rules when it's open outside of when the salmon are in that system, and trout would be catch and release. Might see if there are any questions on the Region 6 portion of Puget Sound.
Mr. Mackin.
Steve, if you go back to McAllister Creek, which is slide number 30, is it? Yeah, there you go. There was a hatchery at one time on McAllister Creek. Is that not right?
Correct. The hatchery facility is still there, but we're not running it. We had disease issues that...
Disease issue was what, nanophyetus?
I believe that's correct, yeah. But I'm not an expert on hatchery diseases.
So are you stocking this at all?
No.
No, so these are just whatever survives the parasite in the area, right?
Correct. The parasite was actually more in the hatchery facility itself, I understand, for our Chinook program. We actually have a fairly robust population of native trout in the system, and it's kind of a well-kept secret for South Sound, or was until this recording gets out. And we're trying to ensure that those fish are protected in there.
I didn't realize there were fish in there. That was my question. So
yes,
thank you.
Other questions?
Okay, I'll move on to the coastal portion of my region. Again, North Coast steelhead will catch at the end, so don't get excited if I don't mention steelhead right away. Okay, we have an opportunity to increase some of our ADA fishery sites. In this case, we're suggesting we have an ADA access site at Forks Creek Hatchery. We would, instead of requiring, right now it's only if you're in a wheelchair that you can fish there. In order to be compliant with current administrative code, the code says that folks with lower extremity disabilities are compliant under ADA. So we would be allowing folks that have other disabilities other than just a wheelchair-bound person to be able to fish there to bring us into compliance with current WACs.
I think it would be valuable if that proposal could be sent to Cindy Colvin so she can send it out to the ADA committee.
Okay.
Just to show that we're always trying to do something, you know, because a lot of times they'll think that we're not doing as much as we can. And whenever we're doing something good, like with the Hunter pamphlet, or, you know, showing so that people with challenges hunting, I think we should show what we're doing whenever we can do that. So, and Cindy can take it from there.
Correct.
And if you could copy me on that too, because I'm the liaison with that committee. So.
No, I think that's a great idea, Commissioner.
And well, I would preface that with asking for their input as well, because that's real important to them. They want to feel like they're, you know, the committee is helping out. So,
yes, sounds great.
Thank you.
The next proposal on the Nacelle River, traditionally when we extended the steelhead season in the river, the commitment was that we would require selective gear rules after February 1st. Somehow in the stream strategy when we converted, we dropped that inadvertently. This would just simply restore regulations that historically we had in there to protect wild steelhead.
Your picture's not there.
I'm trying to decide whether to entertain any questions on what we've gone through or just keep going. But we'll just keep going, so... North Coast steelhead, there were, from the public, we received a number of proposals to adjust fishing regulations on the North Coast. For your consideration, North Coast for us is the Quileut River system, which includes the Solduck, Dickey, Kalawa, Bogashiel, and the Quileut main stem itself. The Ho River system, which is almost exclusively the Ho River, and the Queets system, which includes the Queets and Clearwater. These are the only places in the state that wild steelhead retention is currently authorized. The regulation prohibits or requires anglers to only get one per year. They're only allowed one per year, permits only one per year. And it doesn't matter which river they catch it from, but they only get one. We knew that it was going to be a place that we were going to receive a number of regulations, and there are four major concepts that were proposed. Number one, adopt no fishing from a floating device. These rules were proposed for various segments and times on the rivers. Selective gear rules required. Number for prohibiting the harvest of wild steelhead and or prohibiting the harvest of wild trout in general. Protecting juveniles was the consideration there. And a fourth piece there was to require a wild steelhead harvest tag. I'll talk a little bit about our North Coast Advisory Group here in a second, but that, in order for us to do that, if we charged for a tag, it would require us to work through the legislature to get authorized to do that. So although we've let it stand here for public comment, recognize that the we would have to take that through a legislative proposal in order to make that happen.
Steve, I think I mentioned this at the Fish Committee the other night. This no fishing from a floating device rule was proposed at one point for the Mattow River in our region and was not adopted because we felt that it limited access to elderly and also young people. And the wild steelhead harvest tag, I mean, we're going to have to go through a lot to make that happen. It would take a legislative approval. It would take. It would be a great expense to the department in terms of printing and administering. And actually, I believe that it's been said that even some of the guides have said that they really don't need to kill a wild steelhead any longer. Certainly, we haven't been able to do that in our regions for a long time. And even though they may be abundant on those streams, I really wonder why people would want to do that. Just, again, that's kind of a personal prejudice maybe, is just seeing wild fish taken from streams, even though we're considering doing that on the sketch.
it's not retention.
That's a catch and release, yeah. So that'd be consistent. I really don't know that this whole catch and keep of a wild steelhead is something that would be enduring anyway.
Right. I expect that you'll hear some folks that it's important to them to retain a wild fish if there's a harvestable number. But I'll, you know, we'll hear about that in November, I suspect, when the opportunity for testimony comes up.
Thanks, Steve.
So,
along that same line, what would happen if we did leave the wild steelhead on the table? Would the quileutes and the hoes consider that foregone opportunity?
Potentially.
Yeah.
And I'll touch on that a little bit as I get into the North Coast group. Okay. So recognizing that we were going to have these proposals coming forward, we tried to engage a group of an ad hoc advisory group beginning in July to help us craft perhaps a more holistic approach to steelhead management on the North Coast. We call this the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group. It is a diverse group. I think we had 12 or 13 members. Their whole task was to focus on these North Coast steelhead regulations. I can tell you that everybody that has participated in that has a real passion for steelhead. I mean, there isn't anybody there that doesn't care deeply about steelhead or steelhead fisheries and what they mean to them. We have met six times since July. Our purpose was to try to, like I said, put together a more holistic rule package for the North Coast rather than the piecemeal approach that we got from the public. So I leaned on them hard to try to come to some, what I'll call an acceptable package to them. Larry, you've seen me lean on folks at North of Falcon, and I've leaned on them hard through this process. So the members showed great compromise, diverging from some of their values to put a package together that we could bring to the commission for to ponder and think about whether we want to put this out for the public. They have a fairly comprehensive package of recommendations. Not all of the recommendations are fully supported by all the members, but as I said, I view this as a package as a whole that they could get behind, that they could choke down and support in trying to look at a simplified, consistent message across all three of those systems. I do note that we have a steelhead cutthroat policy advisory group that we had hoped to have discussion about this package of regulations or proposals with prior to this meeting today. We were unable to pull that off, and we still need to meet with those folks and have some feedback from them as to whether this package as it stands is good to go forward for public review. The first item that this group wanted to have in the recommendations was that these were interim recommendations. They did not want these recommendations set in stone for the next 20 years and us not able to change them. And I think their purpose or their rationale behind that was we don't know what's going to happen when we implement these. And if we see further changes in the steelhead populations out there, they would like to be able to respond to those. So they're asking that folks consider them to be interim rather than long-term. One that had, these are sort of in the order of most consensus to least consensus amongst the group. And one that had a lot of consensus was to limit the use of internal combustion motors on all the North Coast rivers. There's only one place right now where we have any appreciable use of internal combustion motors, jet sleds, and that's the very lower portion of the Ho River. The group just felt that this was an issue that they didn't want to deal with in the future and to sort of nip this one in the bud before it gets going. The second one was, it seems less restrictive, but remove selective gear rules on the North Coast rivers where it's in place and for certain times, and instead adopt for all openings in those systems that it would be barbless hooks only, and you could only have one hook, but it could be a treble hook. So right now you could have multiple hooks, and in the selective gear rule areas, it must be a single point hook. They would allow a barbless treble hook. Their thought is that for smolts and sometimes adult steelhead, that a single sidewash hook is taken pretty deep and can cause more injury than a larger treble hook would. Everybody had different viewpoints on that. But barbless hooks, for sure, they were very... there's a lot of consensus that barbless was the way to go throughout the year in those systems.
Excuse me. Dave, how do you feel about the treble hook?
Well, you know, there's a lot of varying attitudes about that. You know, we've... In fact, I was just thinking when we, you know, when I saw this on the screen, one of the guys that I fish with, for example, in the Hanford Reach, and most recently just down here off the mouth of the Klickitat, he loses a lot of fish because if clients are not experienced at fighting fish. And because of the barbless hook rule, he uses three barbless hooks, three barbless treble hooks on his lures now. And actually the other day, I noticed that to remove those hooks, it was very easy. You know, they're still barbless and, you know, even without any pressure and the hooks even fell off in the net. And although it seems to me I'm a little bit opposed to the idea of treble hooks because they get caught in the net, and sometimes that causes issues, just trying to release a fish when it's rolled in the net, that sort of thing. I've always been a big fan of single sidewash, but when they are actually debarbed effectively, they're easy to remove. Yeah. So.
And again, part of the recommendation is that you only have one hook, period.
Right.
So... It's either going to be in the mouth of the fish and should get caught in the net very often. So, the rest of the package for, in terms of rule proposals, release all wild steelhead and rainbow trout. This comes with a caveat that the commission directs the agency to vigorously pursue equitable sharing of the resource with the tribal folks. And that if we're not able to get those fish to the spawning grounds, that we not adopt this. So that they're willing to give up wild steelhead in terms of harvest. Now, recognize we may hear a different story from the Forks community as we move forward in this process. But they want to ensure that those fish are actually conserved and able to get up and spawn. Number four, limit the use of bait to those times in river segments with hatchery steelhead present. I don't know if your packet includes a list of the areas and times that this group came up with. We might need to get that to you. It would have a consistent date when bait would no longer be allowed, basically February 16th. And after that time, bait would not be allowed in for fishing. And it would be allowed during the salmon seasons. So, and the fifth piece, and again, this was perhaps the one that was most controversial amongst the group, prohibit fishing from floating devices on the Ho River above Morgan's Crossing. There were folks that didn't want any prohibitions at all, and there were folks that wanted a lot more than that. And this is the package that they came up with. There are a number of other components in this package that are not related to fishing rules. I just wanted to give you a heads up on these. Obviously, there's no decision to be made on these. We talked a little bit about this back in, I think, August. Consider limits on the number of guides that are allowed to operate on the North Coast systems. This one, I think, is going to... I think everybody in the room thought they would be included in this and nobody else would be allowed in. But as they got to thinking about it, there is no guarantee that the folks that currently hold a license would be. So there may be some backstroking on that one before it's all said and done. Number two, this is one that we don't need any rules, but we can do in our pamphlet, was educate the angling public to encourage proper handling of fish. One of the things, we had some handling rule proposals in the, they did not support any of those. The third one is create an endorsement for fishing for steelhead in North Coast streams. This would be similar to the Columbia River endorsement, funds directed to stock assessment, fishery assessment of steelhead in the North Coast. Obviously would require legislation for us to get there. So these are more long-term issues to try to deal with the group. Some other very long-term issues that we set aside, ask them not to worry about yet, but we'll continue to work with them. And now that we've got maybe a package together, we'll go to work with. A number of the folks on the group believe that our escapement goals are too low. Many of our goals are maximum sustainable yield goals. Some of them have been agreed to with the tribes. Some of them have been ordered by the courts and are compromises between the state tribal differences in the goals. Some we still don't have any. We have a different goal with the tribes. And we tend to manage towards the middle, but there's no guarantees. So they would like a thorough scientific review of all the information that would help us determine if our escapement goals are too low. Obviously, in order for us to change a goal, we'd have to get co-manager agreement. A number of the members feel that the level of catch-and-release fishing is adversely affecting productivity, just the number of viable eggs per female and whether they're able to spawn when and where they need to after they've been handled a couple times. And then the issue that was brought up already by Commissioner Wacker is the state tribal sharing, ensuring that if we conserve fish, they make it into the spawning grounds. Our next steps on North Coast steelhead, we need to review this package of proposals with our Steelhead Cutthroat Policy Advisory Group, consider any comments or suggestions that that group might have, potentially revise a package. We'd like to release this comprehensive package as another alternative proposal for the public to consider, give them an opportunity to think about it and provide feedback. We would come back to the commission in November and report on the public comment, not only of the package that we would release, but the proposals as they came in from the public also. And after the November meeting, as we meet in December, staff would have a recommended course for you. And we will continue to work with this North Coast group on some of those issues that we put in the parking lot, the longer-term issues. So So coastal or North Coast steelhead questions?
Questions? Yes.
Steve, is it true that the guides catch an inordinate number of the fish in the river systems?
Define inordinate for me, Commissioner May.
80%.
I don't believe it's in that range. Their catch per angler is about twice or so of a normal angler in a drift boat. So I'd have to look at the data myself in terms of what their proportion is, but I don't believe it's anywhere in that neighborhood. But individually, the guides are very successful. And some folks feel that we could spread out that opportunity amongst more of the weekend warrior, regular Joe anglers if the guides weren't competing with them for fish. So I don't know that it's necessarily an altruistic, we're going to help the fish. I think it's a little bit about, I might be able to catch more fish if I don't have to compete with that many guides.
Did you discuss limited entry for the guides?
The North Coast group definitely wants to talk about it. Again, they started off down that road, and the recommendation includes that, but I've heard in recent days a lot of backpedaling about, well, wait a minute, I might not be one of those guys that gets one of those licenses. So, you know, I think how we incorporate existing licenses will be important to them.
And then at the Fish Committee meeting, we discussed increasing the out-of-state fee for fishing for steelhead.
I think the discussion was about whether out-of-state guides might have a significantly higher fee than what they do now.
Yes.
Obviously, that would be one of the considerations as we talk about guide licenses as a whole. Could we get higher fees? What would be the legal ramifications for that? And would the legislature support it as we put that package in front of them? So.
Mr. Thurman.
Another proposal that I think came out of the advisory group, and that was to provide education about handling fish. Was
correct.
That specifically for that fishery, or would that be a statewide proposal that they were making?
Well, anything that we worked on in our documents would certainly be for statewide, but obviously this group is suggesting that specific to the North Coast, that there's some tax we can take. You know, the guides themselves, the businesses within the Forks community can all be promoting correct handling of fish to ensure safe release and higher survival rates.
So, any consideration of requiring it as part of the license, like hunter safety?
I hadn't heard that one before. We could certainly broach the topic. Yeah. Sort of a fishing education card or something, or a qualified fishery card. So,
Do any other states have something like that?
I'm not aware. Maybe any of my colleagues?
I'll just say I actually had an angler propose that, an education as part of the fishing license. An angler.
Yeah. Might be of value, in addition to having that in the pamphlet, what suggestions they have for other means of disseminating that or incorporating education.
Correct. That's what we'll be working on here in the next few months with that group, is how do we put together a effective campaign to help anglers understand release methodologies that result in higher survivals. So,
yes.
Steve, why that particular section of the hoe for the fishing from floating device? Because I'd heard earlier, several years ago, TU proposed the upper sole dock. Mm-hmm. So why have they shifted to the hoe?
It wasn't a shift to the hoe. There was a lot of discussion about the upper sole dock. As we got towards the end, I just made a call that this was a... This is what the package ended up being. So everybody gave something in order to get to this package. But
why did you then pick out this section of the hoe?
It was the first one that was suggested by the folks that they really wanted that one. The Solduck was secondary, it seemed to me. Clearly, the TU folks would love to have the Upper Solduck in this. But this is a package of everybody compromised something to get here. So,
I haven't floated the Hoh very much. Is that a well-used floating segment?
It's not as well, a lot of fish, a lot of folks float that section, but they tend to get out and fish there anyway. So it would not be as impactful as it might be on other areas.
The Upper Solduck, I've floated. That's hard to get out of the boat. And huge boulders, deep holes between boulders.
I think if you recall, that was number 5 on the list in terms of most to least consensus or agreement.
Still controversial.
Yeah, and the package itself, I mean, we're going to hear a number of comments about a package like this. And, you know, frankly, that I've been thinking about, is there a way to maybe look at implementing some rules on just one of the systems and then measuring the effects of that rule versus the other systems and see if we can actually achieve a difference in the overall escapement of steelhead in those systems. You know, I still personally question whether our fisheries are truly negatively impacting those stocks, but this was what the group tended to with me making that final call on the floating device. So, but, you know, if there's when we work with the SPAG or if commissioners feel that we need to adjust that before we send it out, certainly consider that.
I think there's definitely been a decline in the quality of experience in fishing the Olympic Peninsula rivers in the past 15 years. And but I, in relation to steelhead side of it, I can't help but believe that solving the problems in Puget Sound is the key to solving the problems on the Olympic Peninsula, in that you won't have so many people driving out to Forks to fish those rivers if we could have a catch-and-release steelhead fishery on the Skagit, for example.
Absolutely.
The two are
Yeah, and the group acknowledged that. They made the same suggestion that opening other areas will help take pressure off the Olympic Peninsula, and the department needs to be actively pursuing that. We did actually talk about Grays Harbor systems as well. Unfortunately, in Grays Harbor, we are at our maximum limit of impact, given that we're not meeting escapement.
Thanks.
Commissioner Carpenter.
I had talked to Craig Burley last night about the Occupy Skagit piece, and he was going to talk to Jim Scott this morning, as he did, and he reported back to me. I didn't bring it up earlier today, but he reported back to me that at least Jim Scott felt that we wouldn't be able to get it through, passed by NOAA for the spring of 2016. Did I get that right? And I urged Craig and others to work on that. And let people know where the tree is and needs to be shook, because NOAA has an innate ability to slow things down, and perhaps we can do something to help that. Right, Steve?
They are very good at slowing things down.
New questions?
One point. I applaud the interest in revisiting conservation objectives, escapement values, floors, whatever we want to call them. But I would also suggest that we come up with something that is consistent, as consistent as possible. And if we have to have different measures for conservation objective, if in some cases we use spawner capacity, in other cases we use escapement values, we explain what the difference is, if there is a difference. Because I, for one, am not sure why we have such different measures.
Okay. If I may add something to that, we talked about that driving over yesterday, and you know, we've got all those different terminologies, and another one that has been used over the years in certain systems is what the floor, what's the floor, you know. Maybe we can get a whole list of those terms and maybe find a one or two that fit everywhere. I think it would be helpful to everyone.
Go ahead. Speaking of Larry's concerns about the Skagit, and there seems to be strong evidence that would support a catch and release season on the Skagit because of the very strong numbers of returning wild fish. The one thing we had an issue with our steelhead seasons in my region in terms of getting not only permits but also just a decision on the approval of seasons. Our seasons have to pass muster, and we weren't able to make even announcements about the seasons until almost too late in the seasons. Due to the frustration in terms of when NOAA would respond to these requests or review the materials and approve or deny, you know, they have deadlines that they're supposed to meet too. And they were missing their deadlines but still not taking any action. And what we finally did that got them to move and respond was actually a letter from that particular committee signed by all and signed by the director that went to the director of NOAA for the issue that we were addressing. I think at some point this commission, I think, is pretty much in favor of what they're trying to accomplish there.
So we can do that.
And we could probably formulate a letter that requests action on their part prior to this, what they think they can do. I think we could get some traction on that. If the commission requested it and the director followed up with that too, I think we could get their attention. We don't need to wait. We can ask for attention or
totally agree.
Express our frustrations.
Yeah, that raises something that I haven't heard in my tenure on the commission, that how the commission could act in a letter form to various federal agencies. I mean, Director, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that we definitely need to put some pressure on them. I know they've been hearing about it for quite some time. Topic last winter.
But do you think a letter coming with our signatures on it would?
Sure.
And I guess But let me bounce that back again. One of my favorite questions. Do you know of other? Is that protocol in other states? Because. Have you heard about that?
I think that we have written some letters to federal agencies. I can think of examples where, in relation to the wolf issue, we've expressed our views to the regional office in Portland. So I would say that it depends on what we say in the letter, whether it's an appropriate and effective approach. We can, if we say things that are helpful and constructive and appropriate, I can't see how it would do any harm. So if we were out of bounds, it probably would not help the department at all.
I agree, Miranda. And if we, you know, if this, we document the support material that shows that, you know, the wild fish production has reached levels that are appropriate for that type of a fishery, then why not?
Yeah. I think we'd also send a good message to our constituents that we're being proactive.
Absolutely. So,
well, this is a little tongue-in-cheek, but it's actually factual. This morning early I had an email from Bob Turner and Will Stell, and they were seeking my input on Will Stell taking his 30-year-old Lund, which should be thrown away and get a new one, I think. But and fishing under Deception Pass, and wanted my guidance on which tide to fish, and how deep to fish, and how close to the shore to fish. Brett, you know what I'm talking about. I said, gentlemen, it's Friday. Go back and work on the HGMPs.
Good for you.
Did you charge him for that advice?
Yeah. Not yet, no.
So let's do that.
Let's do that.
Yeah. I think setting a precedent that we, this is another tool that we can bring forward would be positive. Yeah.
I think the department's maybe exhausted what's available to them.
Yeah.
They've done what they can. They've submitted their request for permit, and now they're just sitting. And if there's anything we can do to light a fire and move this along, let's do it.
In a proactive manner.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Director.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, why don't I check with some folks, prepare a letter, get it back to you. We'll try to get that ASAP. I know since February we've been talking to Noah about it, and my guess is it's been
several Februarys.
Several Februarys. It is a bit frustrating that everything takes 2 or 3 years, and then it still doesn't seem to happen. Why not?
Well, we lose credibility, and I think in this one maybe we can help.
Remember, you're sitting next to an impressionable future leader, so we don't want to make a cynic out of her yet. Yes.
I just feel that the unique voice that the commission might bring to the letter is the public input that we hear a lot. So if staff does prepare the letter, make sure that that's reflected in it.
The one thing I'll say about that, Kim, is that they will hide behind the science. I mean, not to mean that science is not of value, but they will oftentimes discount public opinion.
Well, I'm not saying leave the science out.
No, yeah. But exactly. And if we have the science and also supported by the public input, yes.
That was positive.
Is there any disagreement?
No.
Commissioners all nodding yes down there?
Yep.
Okay. That's not nodding off. That's nodding yes. Okay. Well, everybody good down there?
You on board, Robert?
All right. So, good.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay.
So, Chris Donnelly for the record. At the table. One last rule proposal, and I got to, even though I've moved on to a new job, I was begging Craig to follow this through because it's kind of one of those big things that you start in a new job, and so it's kind of nice to bring it to fruition here. But Lower Columbia warm water proposal, and we were here last year talking to you about implementing the removal of bag limits on warm water fishes in the main stem Columbia in all the portions of the Columbia River contained within the state of Washington.
Could you, for me, just define Lower Columbia geographically?
Sure. Yeah. So I'll get to that. Okay. So the Columbia River that was contained within Washington, you passed these rules on last year. Mm-hmm. Lower Columbia is basically from the Oregon border, slightly above McNary, to the A jetty or buoy 10.
Okay. Right.
And that's what we're asking to change this year. So the reason that wasn't included in last year's rulemaking process is because we run rules consecutively with the state of Oregon in the Lower Columbia portion. And the state of Oregon at that point wasn't in a rulemaking process where they could address this. And so we've coordinated with the state of Oregon over the last year. This went through their commission approval last week. So Oregon has approved this, and now it's in the hands of the Washington Commission. So fairly simple rule, just no harvest limits on those warm water fishes present in the system. And with that, I'll leave it to questions about that, and Craig will close.
And all of those were introduced, right?
Correct. All introduced species, none are native.
Yep.
Thanks, Chris. And so on this, we'll have the on the proposal online, we'll also include the table that identifies the tributaries in the Lower Columbia that this will affect so that folks can see those areas.
Were those fish introduced as all sport fish? Were any of those market fish?
The bulk of warm water fishes that are present in the state of Washington came as a result of the U.S. Fish Commission, and they were brought here to provide food for people. Not necessarily in the form of commercial fishes, but in the form of food sources in waters. The Lower Columbia River is actually the origin source for most warm water fishes that are present in the state of Washington. There's a good book by Lampman called The Coming of the Pond Fishes that would break that history down for you if you were interested.
Well, I was under the impression that walleye were introduced to Lake Roosevelt and then trickled down through the system.
Well, the federal government would have to admit that they put those in there, which they won't. But there is a number of different rumors around the origins of walleye, but it's likely that they started in the headwaters in Lake Roosevelt and then have distributed as larval fish through the remainder of the system.
Right.
Was that L-A-M-P-M-A-N, Lampman?
Lampman with two N's on the end. Very good book, and it's a great history on pond fishes, which are all the...
What's the title again?
The Coming of the Pond Fishes.
Right.
Ben-Hur Lampman is his name, which I think is a really great name.
I don't want to get Craig off message, but I just have a question about Lake Roosevelt, and you brought it up. Several years ago, we adopted a rule to a 16-fish bag for walleye in there to try and remove some of the excess. And how has that worked?
So far, it's worked great. You know, the reality of any really large bag limits is essentially like saying no limit for the average angler.
Yeah.
And so what those big bag limits achieve is there's always windows of opportunity just pre-spawn or in-spawning habitats where people can exploit things to their fullest extent. And what we're seeing is we see some anglers that are harvesting that number of fish. So the fact that you'd observe them in the creel is a much bigger improvement in harvest in terms of number than where we were pre-implementation of that rule.
And so how are the tribe sensitivity to that? Because I know a few years ago there was some concern.
Well, they're very sensitive, and I think that they would prefer to have no limit. However, you know, going back to this rule in the main stem Columbia versus Lake Roosevelt, this gets down to the policy side where we are as an agency, which is in the main stem where we have anadromous recovery, we manage for warm water fish where they're appropriate. They're not appropriate in company with anadromy. In Lake Roosevelt, above a fish barrier where they provide large recreational fishery, and we can manage for them in a way that allows recruitment of native salmonids, red band, rainbow most specifically, they are appropriate. We just have to manage them to those abundances that are appropriate, and that's why we ask for that expanded bag limit.
Thank you.
Also, you know, Larry asked me on the Upper Columbia what was the response of anglers to the suspension of all bag limits, and there was maybe not a huge outcry, but certainly objections from the bass clubs and the walleye clubs, thinking that that will eliminate the species from the river. And I can attest that I don't see piles of carcasses at the boat ramps. And there's still an attitude about walleye that when you catch a very large walleye, that you return it to the water. You know, a 12-pound fish, 10 or 12-pound fish, you know, you're better off with a 16-inch, 18-inch, 20-inch fish than these really large potential spawners. And so there's... And with the bass fishing public, that's largely a catch-and-release item anyway. So that has not had a negative impact that I'm aware of, at least, on the Upper River.
If you ask me what my preferred outcome for that rule would be, is that we'd see a reduction in predation of out-migrating juveniles as a result of the rule. And
right.
But I do think that there's a challenge from the perspective that warm water anglers are inclined to be catch and release anglers. And we deal with many fish management issues on the main stem Columbia, as well as in reservoirs and natural lakes, where we really need more harvest to allow for the proper balance of predator to prey. And so one of the challenges that we are going to have to overcome is breaking the catch and release ethic, right? It's a very effective campaign that started in the 70s, had multiple positive biological impacts, but in some places, especially with species like smallmouth and walleye, catch and release is probably not what we need. We need right. Catch and fish taco.
Fillet and release.
Yeah,
fillet
and release. We really need to get those predator densities down to allow forage recruitment. tiered species management so that native salmonids can live in those places. And so I'm hoping that, you know, we've got to build that level of confidence with the warm water community that populations don't crash when we implement new rules. Right. And I always point at Moses Lake and potholes as being two, four instances of where we set appropriate regulations for walleye, lowered abundances of fishes based on those rules due to harvest exploitation rates, and we have better walleye fisheries today than we've had. And so we can do it with the proper science. And one of the advantages we have over the state of Oregon in terms of implementing these rules is we have dedicated monies for warm water fish. Mm-hmm. And we are a data-driven program that allows us to make really wise decisions about rules and implementing changes for warm water fish.
You know, Chris, those are excellent examples of, based on science and contrary to public attitude, changing the rules on Moses Lake and Potholes Reservoir has had spectacular results. I'm making this commissioner down here from the UP jealous of the photos that I send him of fish that we catch over there. And also, when that rule was even proposed on the Upper Columbia to eliminate the bag limits, the immediate response was, well, no, you know, we can't allow this to happen, without thought of why. And the, as you say, we're managing for anadromous fish, and these species have potential damage. And, you know, if they made the bounty on pike minnow $12, I'd probably quit my job.
I always have one conversation with bass and walleye anglers on the main stem, and I don't mean this as an eye poke to them, but with these rules, they have an opportunity to be an active participant in salmon and steelhead recovery, and if we can continue to push that message on the main stem, I think it would be helpful. And you'll hear feedback on this rule, just like you did last year, that there's really no science to support this. And what I'd say to you is that main stem predation is likely not where this is occurring. Where we're seeing issues that occur for recruitment of smolts are intense, acute predation issues at the mouths of natal tributaries.
Yeah.
And very difficult to capture the science that proves that's occurring. But the one piece of science we have that would support this when you hear public feedback is the Yakima River study. That we went through with smallmouth bass that looked at the level of predation on out-migrating fall Chinook and in-migrating spawning smallmouth bass. So when this comes to you, and I'm certain it will, that's the best study that you could use to support the argument that we that we're doing the right thing.
Right. Good.
So I'd like to close and note that I think we're back on schedule.
Yes.
So again, the initial briefing here today, we will take the information from the North Coast Steelhead Advisory Group and we'll put that on our agency webpage for those proposals that are already online so that the public can see the evolution of the thinking around those proposals. We'll be accepting public comment in writing through our online tool through November 4th. We'll have the public hearing November 13-14 meeting in Olympia, and then we'll bring recommendations before you on December 11-12 in Port Townsend. And these, again, will be rules for the July 1, 2016 pamphlet. So with that, any last questions?
Anything to my right? One, two, three. Anything to my left? One, two, three. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good job, guys.
Well done.